No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, a collaboration between RevengeOfTheBirds.com from SB Nation and CardsWire.com, part of the NFL Wire from USA Today Sports Media Group. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, and on the line with me as my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Jess. How's it going?
Well, you know, all is kind of okay. I mean, aside from what we're all busy with our personal lives, and you're getting ready to, you know, take your gig out to the East Coast to the Midwest to and you'll be doing this podcast here in a couple of months from the freezing cold of Chicago. But all right, isn't that right?
Yeah, and you know it's going to be cold, but at least the Cardinals won a game, right? I mean, we got that going for us.
We do have that going for us. In fact, the Cardinals come off of the bye week. We decided to forego the bye week podcast between stuff that was going on with it and all last week. So those of you who are waiting with bated breath for our last show, I apologize. We're back on, you know, recording on a Tuesday night following the Cardinals coming off their bye week. Getting a division win at home, their first one, in fact, their first division win at home over the San Francisco 49ers, 23-20. Wasn't exactly what everyone wanted to see, but you did get a couple of things. They start early, they give up the lead late, and they get a game-winning kick to end the game. So we'll have lots to talk about. So we got the Cardinals coming off the bye. They're now 4-4-1. So we're going to talk about, the main thing we're going to talk about is the San Francisco game, the good and the bad. You know, was it good for them when they won the way they did? We're going to talk about the running game, the defense, Colin Kaepernick. Likewise, coming up on the show in this episode, we're going to talk about the playoffs, the playoff talk, the playoff standings, talk about the Seahawks and the division, you know, whether the Cardinals have a better chance getting into the wild card or win the division. We're kind of look at where they stand now in a very, very messy NFC. Then we'll kind of close the show talking about their upcoming game against the Minnesota Vikings and some roster moves that were made by the Cardinals this week. We'll go ahead and tell you what those roster moves were. The Cardinals made a move on Tuesday. A bit of a surprise. They bring back the much maligned Drew Butler, punter Drew Butler, everybody's favorite player for the Cardinals, and let go of Ryan Quigley again. Drew Butler previously waived with an injury settlement earlier this season after suffering a couple injuries.
Has it been 6 Ryan weeks?
He was released on October 4th. So it has been 6 weeks. Like exactly 6 weeks to the day it appears. So yeah, we'll talk about that. Well, because that's honestly, it's a puzzling move. I still don't understand it. And I don't, pretty much anyone that I've talked to within, you know, the media is like, I don't think anyone understands this move. Not at all. But we'll talk about that more. This show is brought to you by FanEssentials.net, where if you like to get gear from your favorite team, then FanEssentials.net is probably the place for you. It finds the gear for you so you don't have to. And it's sent to your doorstep every month. And you get new stuff, all sorts of fun stuff every single month. So FanEssentials.net. You could give it as a gift. You could do it for yourself and just collect all sorts of Arizona Cardinals gear, or honestly, any NFL team or other pro sports team that you'd like. It's FanEssentials.net. If you go there, you can. Their plans start at $34.99 a month, and if you sign up with the promo code CRED, you can get 15% off your first month to give it a try. Again, FanEssentials.net for all the essentials you need. And let's go ahead and get started with this first part. We're going to talk about the Cardinals getting a big important win, 23-20 over the San Francisco 49ers. Let's just sort of react to this. What did you think about the win? Was it good? Was it bad? Let's get your take, their initial take on that. So your initial take on the Cardinals getting that win. Was it a good game for the Cardinals?
The win itself was good. The way they won was bad. But in the end, in the NFL, you take a win whenever you can get it. And after games where the Cardinals lost because of missed field goals or missed calls or missed, you know, snaps or whatever the reason, you'll take a bad win over a bad loss. So I think you're unhappy with the performance coming out of a bye week, but you are happy that they're in the win column and that they continue to maintain pace and even gain ground in that wild card race.
And for me, it was really kind of what the doctor ordered. And obviously, there's no such thing in the big picture. There's no such thing as a bad win, because a win is a win. And if you need to get wins, you just win. You know, the more and more I talk about it, and I kind of convince myself that although the 49ers are not a team that they should let back in the game based on their season, that makes them, you know, there's a couple of things that I take on this. Is one is that the 49ers are a bad team. However, they were a team that the Cardinals had already beaten. And one thing we should know, and we probably have seen year after year, it's really difficult to beat teams twice in a season. We see it win the division every single year. In fact, pretty much every team in the NFL experiences this sort of thing. Beating a division team twice in the same season is tough. Sweeping teams are tough because there's familiarity. You've seen them. And in the case of the Cardinals, who sort of ran away after really kind of playing slowly in San Francisco on Thursday night, they pulled ahead. And while the, you know, 21 points, it was only a 12-point win. It was a game in which after when he hit pretty much the end of the first half, the Cardinals dominated. So teams are pride, you know, NFL players play with pride. They don't like losing. When they get beat up, they want to do the same. They want to make amends. They want to get better. They want revenge. And so the 49ers were doing that. So you knew that we were going to play a motivated 49ers team. You get Colin Kaepernick back, who also wanted to play a very good game after his embarrassing performance at University of Phoenix Stadium a season ago. And you get a Cardinals team who really hadn't done anything other than beat bad teams. They beat another bad team. But if you look at it, winning a close game was actually, I think, was a positive for them, even though it's not a positive that they ended up having to win a close game. The fact that they did do it, because they did it so often last year, and this year it just hasn't happened. You know, they lose on the last day. They missed the field goal in week one to win it. They missed the field goal against Seattle to win it. And it just, the things weren't going their way. So they win a close game. And I was talking to you about this off the air, and this actually is the blueprint that the Cardinals used almost exclusively, almost every single game that they played in their winning streak last season, from the midpoint of the season on, is they would get out to an early lead. So they would get out ahead early. The team they played would get back into it. And sometimes they'd lose a lead. Sometimes it'd be a tie. Sometimes it'd be close. And then the Cardinals would make plays late down the stretch. In this case, you know, with less than 2 minutes left, the San Francisco 49ers, they score and they tie the game. Just enough time for the Cardinals to march down the field and kick a field goal to win it. And that's kind of how you drew it up. That's how they did it all last year. So in a sense, I thought it was kind of a positive. I didn't leave that game thinking, oh. I mean, they won, and it wasn't a confidence-building win. But for a team that really needed something at all, starting off and getting a win at home in the division, even against a bad team, so they just had to get it done, and it didn't really matter how they did it.
Yeah, and that's the reality of it. It was an ugly win, but you'll take an ugly win over over what we've seen, you know, against Seattle, obviously against Carolina, and in Buffalo. So you take it and you move on and move forward and hope that the team that we all expected is still somewhere within the realm of possibility for these guys, right? Like that there is still a team that maybe they're not a Super Bowl contender, but they're one of the other guys, and they're one of the teams that can really, you know, push anybody on any given Sunday. We saw it against Seattle. It was a must, you know, it was a kind of a must-win game when you look back at it, because now Seattle's taking what feels like commanding two-game lead in the division. And, you know, the NFC overall is just, you know, ugh.
Like, that's it's kind of garbage. I mean, it's not that they're bad teams, but there's a bunch of teams that are super inconsistent. You don't know what you're going to get week from to the next, other than the Cowboys, and now other than the Seahawks. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later. The NFC is a crapshoot.
Right, and so you look at it, and so you take the win because it keeps them in a place to, you know, if they lose that game, again, mathematically it's not over, but it's over. So you take that win, and you move on, and you don't get upset about winning that game, right?
Right, and I'm already on the record. I'm already on the record as saying that the Cardinals' season was ended. Like basically, that loss in Carolina did them in. I'm on the record as saying that. That I think the Cardinals can do it, and they're capable of doing it. And I want them to do it. Obviously, not only as a someone that follows the team, but I've been a fan forever. So I'm not bailing on the team. I just don't think that they can't, that they're going to do it. But this is the first step. They got to win against a team. And say what you will, the Browns are going to end up winning a game somehow. And it's going to probably come against a team that, well, granted, no one should lose to the Browns. But
the Cardinals
gonna,
don't play.
Yeah, and because that'd be the thing. I wouldn't want the Cardinals to play the Browns because they would be the team that would lose to them. It just would happen that way this year. And so, you know, to actually win a close game is a confidence builder for the team. It's not a confidence builder for those following this, because all you see is a Cardinals team who's supposed to be Super Bowl contenders that are trying to fight their way back into the playoffs after a tough start. They're playing a bad 49ers team, and they give up a lead, and they barely win. And they didn't look impressive. And there were parts of the game that were impressive, but overall they didn't look overly impressive. There are aspects, and we'll talk about that. There were some aspects of it, but for them, it kind of gets the monkey off their back, I think, in a way, because they got a close win. They made the plays late, and, you know, they finally won a division game at home.
Yeah, exactly. And that was important. You know, now they're 1-1-1 in the division at home. So, but, you know, you look at it overall in this game, I think, you know, to get critical, you have to be critical of two things. And it's the oddest two things to get critical about. You got to be critical about the running game and the lack of just mental fortitude and toughness to impose your will on a team that has basically been the equivalent of wet toilet paper when defending the run. You raise an eyebrow. I don't want to say you're upset. You raise an eyebrow at the pass defense against a less than stellar passing attack. Colin Kaepernick looked like a guy that the San Francisco 49ers could continue to build around, right?
He's giving them just enough hope. Just enough hope.
And that's weird. Don't you think? Like, you and I had talked about it, you know, off the air, and I've talked about it on Twitter and stuff. And I mean, you didn't expect Colin Kaepernick, and he has looked good at times. I talked to Dave Vucillo of Niners Nation and SB Nation, and you know, he kind of wrote about that. Like, I think, you know, he said, you know, he's looked good, but it was against the New Orleans Saints, and it wasn't it wasn't something that could be carried over and continued. And then he looks good against the Arizona Cardinals, and they're supposedly the best pass defense in the NFL, and you're just like, oh no, like, what, this isn't what we expected. I think those are the two negatives that come out of this game. You know, how soft your offensive line played in the run game, and then again, your inability to really take away the passing game of the 49ers. You did a great job. And I get it's the NFL, and you're going to, you know, teams are going to be able to move the ball. But it just, at times, it looked too easy out there for the 49ers. And I think you saw them, the Cardinals, miss Tyrann Mathieu. And they even missed Thurald Simon, because it made Marcus Cooper their you know, nickel slot corner, and I wouldn't say that's necessarily his strength.
Now, Bruce Arians said that himself. You know, Cooper played poorly. But what we're actually seeing, in part, you talk about the two things that raise eyebrows, and those happen to be two areas in which they're counting on backups to help, obviously, in the pass defense. And we said this before, no Tyrann Mathieu on the field, even if he's not 100%, there's something about his presence on the field and the passion with which he plays. And when he's playing in his position, even if he's not playing particularly well, the defense looks different. They got good play from Justin Bethel on the outside. They, you know, Marcus Cooper wasn't particularly in. But to be honest, when the Cardinals played the 49ers in San Francisco, and that was Matthew's first, you know, game back in the slot, he didn't do well. But when he's out there, the defense plays differently. And then you look at the running game, we kind of point to two positions. You know, at left tackle, John Wetzel held his own in pass protection. It was an interesting comment that Bruce Arians made of. He thought he played a solid game, but then he talked about how everyone else could have played better. I don't think Wetzel played well. He played solid, but the fact that I think what we saw was from Wetzel was pretty much his ceiling. So he's going to do okay. Obviously, he's not quite the run blocker. Earl Watford, you know, his play has kind of, when he's getting this extended playing time, it has become evident where he kind of fits as a role in the league, that he's a good guy to finish the game. He's good depth. But when it comes to playing 65 snaps a game, he's not nearly the best option, at least yet. And between he and DJ Humphreys on the outside, there are things that defenses who can to confuse them. And, you know, we're talking about how great David Johnson has been. And very quietly, he was limited to 24 yards in Carolina and 55 yards against San Francisco. And teams are starting to key on him, yes. But are we starting to see Johnson hit sort of a wall where he kind of slows down in his production?
Maybe. I mean, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility and unexpected, but I think there were a couple times where he we've talked about this before, his vision is not necessarily his strongest suit, right? Like,
yeah,
it's not his best suit. And I think I counted three times, and that's not a ton, I mean, but where he missed the hole. So that, you know, that's going to happen. And then the other 16 times, there's just a lot of bad blocking. A lot of bad blocking.
And he did the best he could. And yes, he looked a little more – he looked – you know, remember those first few games in the pros last year, and he didn't – and I made this comment, I tweeted it out at some point, but what you noticed from him is that he wasn't getting his foot in the ground and moving forward. He was almost too eager to go for the big play. And maybe that was the result of the success that he'd had doing that. But, you know, on a, as Arian said on Monday, you don't do that on second and one. On second and one, you see the whole whatever place that you're going, you put your foot in the ground and you gain 2 yards instead of getting hit for a loss. You know, the running games, that they didn't run block well at all. So you had problems with Earl Watford. You had problems in the interior. You had some problems with the tight ends blocking. It had a little more indecisiveness when it came to David Johnson. So they didn't run the ball well. The other side to that, though, because there was a little bit, the passing game looked like the passing game of old, mostly. And let's bring us to the next topic of conversation, and that is the return of Michael Floyd, who makes Carson Palmer sound almost prophetic. Now, Carson Palmer last week says that, you know, Michael Floyd's going to explode the second half of the season. He's been, you know, massaging Floyd's ego over the bye week and kept talking to say, hey, we need you. I'm going to keep making throws. If you're making plays, I'm going to throw you the ball. Well, what happens? He's targeted 6 times. He makes 5 catches, 101 yards, and it was vintage Michael Floyd. It was the 50-50 balls. It was the balls down the field where he goes up and gets it and then comes down and doesn't gain any more yards. And even the one target that he had, it took a very good play and coverage to keep him from catching that ball. You could almost say, yeah, that probably could have, but that was a great play made down the field. Otherwise, you know, he'd have had a 6th catch for another, went probably another 30 yards. A fantastic game by Floyd, and you notice what the passing game looks like when Floyd is on.
Yeah, when he's able to win those 50-50 balls that we've talked about before. You know, he's not a – I think when people get, you know, listen to me talk about Floyd, they always have this idea that I don't like him. And it's not that I don't like him as a player. It's just that he's limited in what he's good at. In what he's extremely good at, and something we've talked about before, is he's a great ball catcher. What he's not good at is pretty much everything else.
He will show flashes. He's shown flashes of getting the ball in the middle of the field, flashes of it, and then running through people.
Right.
But what we see with a lot of receivers, if you're high pointing the ball, it's really hard to gain yards after the catch. Because if you have to leap up to catch a pass, it's usually contested. And if it's contested, it's not like you're going to land on your feet and be able to run with it. You're going to go down. And so, yeah. In fairness to him, and his only is 3 yards after the catch, if those are the only balls that you're being thrown to, then you're not going to get yards after the catch. He brings an element to the offense that nobody else does. His skill set, because when you talk about from a physical standpoint, he has an elite set of skills, but between his size, speed, and ball skills, No one else on the team can do that. We're talking Larry Fitzgerald, you know, 7 years ago, what he could do.
And I think he's even faster than Fitz was when he was younger. Yes. He just doesn't understand how to use all of that, right? Like, he just doesn't understand how to really play wide receiver still, it seems like, at times. And, you know, that's disappointing. But I think when you look at it from the sense of, you know, I've often compared him to Vincent Jackson, the stellar, you know, wide receiver from Tampa Bay who you know, burst onto the scene
in San Diego.
And I think if he would have had a similar, you know, draft status to Vincent Jackson, his play, his disappearing for, you know, games at a time would not be an issue. But it's the fact that, you know, Michael Floyd was drafted 15th overall. Vincent Jackson was kind of a you know, he was drafted in round two, but the very end of round two. And, you know, he's had some really nice seasons. I think he's even made a Pro Bowl. But he's never, you know, he's never been the guy. Like, you've always tried to pair him with somebody else. And, yeah, Vincent Jackson made three Pro Bowls. So he's had some really nice seasons in Tampa and San Diego. But he's never, you know, never was the guy where you were like, oh, we just, you know, he can take over a game and dominate. And I think that's what or I shouldn't say that. He's never the guy that he's going to dominate weekly inside, you know, game to game. But he's a guy that can take over stretches of games and stretches of seasons. And you look at Vincent Jackson's kind of stats, and he's led the league in yards per reception. That sounds really familiar, right? Like,
yeah.
A 6'5 big guy that leads the league in yards per reception. And he's a guy, you know, that averages right around, you know, in his peak, he's averaging right around 8 touchdowns. And those are all things that we, you know, we expect of of Michael Floyd. I think the difference is, the hard part is, he's never had one season quite as good as what Vincent Jackson had. So we're still waiting for that one season.
We're waiting for the dominant season, like a whole season.
Right.
Like, and you know, the really slow start he had this year, he had the same sort of slow starts last year. In fact, he only had one more catch through 8 games last year than he did through 8 games this year. The difference being, last year he started off with a really gruesome hand injury that he was coming back from. Nonetheless, he still ended up with 750 yards, he made a bunch of plays, and you know, was actually flirting with down the stretch, perhaps catching the 1,000-yard mark. So, I mean, if the Cardinals are going to do what they need to do, Michael Floyd's performances need to be like this on a regular basis.
Season. It needs to be another. I wrote about it last week. I don't even remember, but he last week I wrote about it, and you know, talked about every year since Arians has come here, he's had a dominant stretch. Whether it's, you know, 4 games or 5 games or 10 games, you know, he's had a dominant stretch. Let's see here. I got it somewhere. But, you know, you look at it now, and you're just waiting, right? You're waiting to see if he's going to have that dominant stretch. So he's had one game. So is coming, you know, put together another 100-yard game this week, you know, scored touchdowns. So he, you know, I think – a lot of it, yeah. So in 13, he had 3 games where he had almost 400 yards. In 14, he had 5 games where he had almost 400 yards. And then last year, like you said, 43 catches, 729 yards, and 6 touchdowns. He becomes a, you know, a 5-catch, 90-yard guy. And that's what they need him to be. That's just what they need him to be. And you know, that's 19 yards per catch. That's what we're talking about. Like, that's who he is. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and get, you know, 8 catches for 200 yards. He's just not that guy. But he can be a guy that catches 5 passes and gains, you know, 20 yards on all 5 passes, because every attempt is, you know, 17 yards to 25 yards down the field. And that's who he is as a player. So I think they're in a good spot. And like you said, they need him if they're going to come back and be the team that we've kind of expected. And it starts this weekend with a Minnesota team that, what, 4 weeks ago, you and I,
they were Super Bowl passingly,
team. Yeah, passingly talked about that they were one of the best teams in the NFC. And now they're looking really dumb for trading their first-round pick for Sam Bradford, not because of Bradford, but just because the talent on the team is just not,
you know, that this Minnesota team is essentially what the 2012 Cardinals were. get off to this hot start. Remember, they were talking the same type of thing, dominant defense. They're getting enough play from quarterback. They're dealing with injury on the offensive line, and then things fell apart, and it looks like things are starting to fall apart for Minnesota. But yeah, we need that. Michael Flynn needs to play like that. On the other hand, you know, only a week after Bruce Arians declares J.J. Nelson the starter, he has himself an awful game. Awful.
He does, you know, drop in a pass that leads to an interception, a fumble. This is something you and I have talked about before. Why these guys look so slow? Like, he's supposed to be one of the fastest players in the league, and I get that these corners are, you know, just like literally a step slower, but it's like step for step with them. Like, that's, you know, if you, you know, not to get all whatever, but when you watch the all 22 of it, it's not like he's creating separation, right? Like, look at this guy create this separation, and, you know, like, he doesn't look as fast as what he timed as. And let's be completely honest when it comes to J.J. Nelson. His attribute, what he brings to the table is speed. It's not size. It's not run after the catch. It's being able to take the top off of defense. And if, you know, corners are able to run kind of step for step, he's not really serving the purpose, because he's not going to be able to do what Michael Floyd can do in that same circumstance.
Exactly. And Nelson's kind of interesting. And it's kind of I saw this with Arians, and I almost said something, tweeted something about it, is Arians sounded just like the way he sounded when he declared Brandon Williams the quarterback, the starter. And he says, Brandon Williams is our starter. 2 weeks later, he's not. J.J. Nelson's our starter until someone takes it away. We might see Michael Floyd starting on Sunday. I wouldn't be surprised. Because if you look at the playing time, Michael Floyd got starter playing time. He played 75% of the snaps, and J.J. Nelson was down the line. Now, part of that is because they ended up doing a lot of three wide sets, and Floyd was the third receiver, and John Brown was number four as they're working him back in. On the defensive side of the ball, they did a really good job against stopping the run. Basically, you know, Carlos Hyde, 13 carries for a whopping 14 yards. So when it comes to stopping the running game, running backs, fantastic work. They did exactly what they're supposed to. You know, they had some breakdowns down the field. So it's not like they defended the pass poorly overall. There were some individual issues. Jeremy Curley, who had 8 catches for 102 yards in San Francisco and a touchdown, he follows that up with 7 catches for 71 and a touchdown. And, you know, he gave Marcus Cooper and Tyrann Mathieu problems in San Francisco. And once again, he gave Marcus Cooper trouble in Phoenix. And again, this is where we see that the Tyrann Mathieu effect. Because, you know, they had a couple of plays down the field with Vance McDonald. A tight end's going to break free every once in a while against the Cardinals. You know it's going to talk about it. But, you know, the passing game was okay. The thing that we saw is that Colin Kaepernick, after getting sacked early a couple of times, Chandler Jones picking up 2 more sacks on the season, he looked kind of like the Kaepernick we saw a couple of years ago, the Jim Harbaugh version of Colin Kaepernick, where he was making plays with his legs. And it took him a little bit because they were really overselling on the running back and really just overselling the edge. Josh Morrow making a couple of nice plays. You know, you could tell that he knew the film, that what was going to happen. But there was a couple that, you know, it didn't take long till Colin Kaepernick was keeping the ball and running with it. And he ends up with 55 yards rushing, including the 19-yard touchdown run. You know, that becomes the fourth quarterback to kind of give them some issues. Tyrod Taylor did it, Blaine Gabbert did it, Cam Newton, and now Colin Kaepernick. The scrambling quarterbacks, the mobile quarterbacks, give the Cardinals trouble. Overall, defensively, if you look at the numbers, they still only gave up 281 yards total. They gave up the 20 points. That was a little bit of issues, you know. So they only gave up 83 yards rushing, and 55 of those were off quarterback, you know, rushes. the Cardinals were not penalized. They only had two penalties the whole game. The issue is that they didn't get off the field. They dominated time of possession, but they had the ball 5 minutes more. So defensively, you look at, they were sound with breakdowns. And against a 49ers team and against a Chip Kelly offense, you almost look at that and go, you know, that's kind of the thing that they've been able to do. They've been pesky offensively. They've been terrible defensively, the 49ers, but they've been pesky offensively, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, and that's what Fuch kind of talked about when we did we didn't do the questions that we normally do. We just did a couple questions back and forth, and that was one of the things. It's like, is this offense sustainable with Colin Kaepernick? And he said no. And so, you know, to see them come out and put up 20 points and, like you said, almost 300 yards passing – I was like, what? Like, he just told me this offense sucked. Now they're coming out here and doing this to, you know, again, like it's when you look at it in the scope of the NFL, but when you look at it in the scope of, hey, this is supposed to be the best passing defense in the NFL. And he kind of, I don't want to say pick it apart, you know, but like he toyed with Marcus Cooper a lot. You look at it and go, oh, all right, there's still some kinks to work out. They need guys to get healthy. It's one of those things. You look at it and you go, okay, there's still some issues that need to be rectified.
And so we'll wrap up that kind of this part of the show. We'll come back up on the next section, on the next segment of Rise Up Sea Red. We're going to talk about playoffs specifically. We're talking about playoff seeding. We're in the second half of the season, so the playoff picture becomes critical. So that's what's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and now we're going to talk about playoff picture. The Cardinals entered week 10, the 11th seed. And As we alluded to early on in the show, the NFC is a mess. Had everything gone perfectly for the Cardinals, they got their win and certain things, they could have been as high as seventh. Right now, they're ninth in the NFC. They're at 4-4-1. I mean, that the top of the city we know is expected. You've got Dallas Cowboys at 8-1, Seattle at 8-6-2-1. The other two division leaders are Atlanta at 6-4, and Detroit at 5-4. As Minnesota has fallen off the division lead. And Minnesota, actually, they're not even in the playoffs as of today because the Giants and the Redskins. So basically the entire NFC East is in there because the number seven seed is Philadelphia. That was the game that the Cardinals could have ended up as high as seventh had the Falcons taken care of business against Philadelphia. And
yeah, how come teams can't help the Cardinals? No, I'm just kidding.
they got a couple, but then so here they are. They're really right there in the mix. And from what I heard today, I haven't broken down things, the scenarios. Entering this week, they could end up as high as sixth. They could be in the final wild card spot in the week coming up. Or if everything goes, they could end up being 13th. They could end up 13.
Hey, let's keep it positive. Let's keep it positive.
So it's going to be somewhere in there. But we're also seeing is that, unfortunately, the Cardinals didn't get the help that fans hoped that they would get from the New England Patriots as they lose to the Seahawks in Gillette Stadium there in Foxborough. And so so Seattle now kind of entering the stretch where, they're looking at the rest of their schedule. You look at it and you say, they might not lose. They might not lose again. And the Cardinals now with their two games back, they need to gain a game. And so I heard on the radio talking about how, you know, Seattle playing, who do they play? They play Philadelphia. That we should start conceding the fact that the NFC West is done. Now, I think that's the case, but to start rooting for, say, Seattle to win, to beat the Eagles so that the Cardinals could pass the Eagles in the wild card race is absurd, because all you need the Cardinals to gain a game and then to keep even with them until week 16. And then that week 16 essentially becomes a winner take all for the division. Now, the issue is that's assuming that the Cardinals can keep pace. You know, Seattle still has Philadelphia at home. They have Carolina at home. They do have to travel to Green Bay, but Green Bay looks like garbage right now. You look at their schedule, and then they close the season with three division games. And so you've got the Rams, the 49ers, and those are both going to be wins because they lost it. I mean, because they lost the Rams earlier. So they're not going to lose to them again. They're going to beat the 49ers, and they've got the Cardinals game. A team that looks so vulnerable didn't lose games. So there are two games that they had, right? The Buffalo game and the Arizona game. They were thoroughly dominated. Those are games that they should have had else. They didn't. One was a win. One was a tie. And when those happen, then you're thinking, oh, Cardinals kind of lost their opportunity. So everything's still in reach. It just looks like a mess.
Well, I'll say this. They're not getting in front of Seattle. Barring a Russell Wilson injury, they're not getting in front of Seattle. You know, you called them out of the playoffs last week or 2 weeks ago. I'll say the same thing about the division. The division's over at this point. Like, it's not a negative thing. It's not anything like that. It's just a reality. Like, the way the schedule sets up the way the games met, like the Cardinals, they hope that they go undefeated is one game, and then the Cardinals are able to beat Seattle in Seattle on Christmas Eve in order for this to, you know, be a realization. And necessarily know that you can expect Seattle to lose a game over the next remaining games until they play Arizona again. So that's where I think the issue is. I don't think it's that Seattle's necessarily that much better than Arizona. I just think that they, like you said, they found ways to win games.
They should have won those games.
They won games they shouldn't have. And the Cardinals, in turn, lost games they shouldn't have. So, you know, and maybe that's the difference in the definition of good versus bad, right? Like, or good versus average. The Cardinals are the definition of average, sitting at 4-4-1. Seattle is 6-2-1, and in second in the division. So, or yeah, the conference, excuse me, and second in the conference, and you know, it's going to take a lot of prying to get that out of there. So, I mean.
So here's the question. When you have this game coming up with Seattle and Philadelphia then, are you wanting Seattle to win so that the Cardinals can pass the Eagles? Or do you want the Eagles to win so you can gain a game on Seattle? I'm still of the opinion, obviously, you know, ultimately, you gain a game on somebody, assuming the Cardinals win. So it's a net positive and a net negative all at once. But would you rather see the Eagles lose and the Cardinals pass, or still would you rather see Eagles get the upset and allow the Cardinals to sneak in a little closer to the Seahawks, potentially setting them up so that way they only have to stay even where they're at and then to the winner take all in week 16.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Like, it's a lot to ask teams to go into Seattle and win. Don't you think?
Oh, it is, especially since Philly has been garbage on the road.
Right. Not only that, but they're as much of a question mark as Arizona is. When you say, like, they show up 1 week and you're like, oh, this team's really, really good. And then they show up the next week and you're like, is this the same team? Like, what happened? I'm not sure what happened. So, yeah.
Carson Wentz went from potential Hall of Famer to draft bust in the middle of 3 weeks.
Right. Well, that's Twitter for you. So, but I mean, you look at Seahawks and their schedule coming up. I mean, the Eagles on Sunday, that's like you said, that's a tough one. The Bucs, they go to Tampa Bay. I mean, Green Bay is honestly probably the Arizona to gain that game, right? Don't you think? And Green Bay looks like garbage. I mean, Carolina still has the juice to do it. I wouldn't expect them to. I mean,
no,
they haven't actually done anything this year.
They've only looked good against Arizona. That's be honest. That's they've only looked good against Arizona.
So I think that's, you know, I think those are the things. I just think this is a wild card team right now. Like, if you look at it at best, this is a wild card team, and that's not a bad thing. Let's put it this way. Of the talent to make a run, whether or not they up to that ability is another conversation, but they have to get into the playoffs, and then, you know, maybe they're a flawed team similar to like Green Bay was last year, right? Like, Green Bay was clearly a very flawed team, but they had the ability to take the Cardinals to overtime. Whether or not, you know, you call it fluky or whatnot, it was, but they still had the ability to take the Cardinals to overtime in that game. I think the Cardinals could be a similar team where they can go, you know, beat a Detroit in Detroit, or they can go beat an Atlanta in Atlanta, and then have a chance against a Dallas in Dallas, you know, theoretically, if they're the sixth seed, and have that chance because they match up fairly okay with Dallas. But that's kind of how you have to look at it. Like, they have the ability to win in the playoffs still, so they have to get there. And I know that kind of seems odd, like, oh, well, if they have the ability to win the playoffs, wouldn't you just expect them to get to the playoffs? But that's the thing. They haven't shown a consistent, you know, winning attitude. And so, no, I don't expect them just to make the playoffs because they haven't shown that that's something that they're capable of this year in this iteration of the team.
Well, and they've made enough mistakes to where they're in doubt. I mean, if they take two plays, you know, you've got those two kicks. If he makes those kicks, then they're sitting at the same record as what Seattle is right now. They're looking at 6-2-1 and number two seed in the division. And then in Seattle, well, they'd be looking at, you know, 6-2.
6-2 or 7-2.
6-3. 7-1-2. No, it's just 6-3, I guess.
No, because you got to take their tie off. Oh yeah, you're right.
Right, 6-3. It'd be 6-3, and they'd be they would be in a virtual tie with Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be in a virtual tie with Seattle, but which is exactly what we expected to see. This is what we expected to see from the Cardinals. It was supposed to be a dogfight between them and the Seahawks in the second half of the season. You'd have both teams sitting at 6-3 with the Cardinals, you know, with the temporary tiebreak with the head-to-head. But, you know, we know the Cardinals talent-wise have it. They just haven't put it together this year. They're playing differently. They're playing differently than in a season ago. And so they're in the mix. And, you know, I still personally am hoping Philadelphia wins in Seattle. I still hope that because I cannot in my right mind root for the Seattle Seahawks to beat anybody. It doesn't compute. And so I want Seattle to lose, but it's not the end of the world if they do win, because they're going to clear, assuming the Cardinals can't, you know, this is always assuming Cardinals win. The Cardinals win in Minnesota.
Exactly. Everything is based on the Cardinals actually taking care of their own business.
So they do what they're supposed to. Then Seattle can help them by, you know, that way they leapfrog Minnesota. They leapfrog Philadelphia. And then if Washington loses, then they could also leapfrog them as well. And they could potentially be either – they could be number six, number seven, heading into the next game against Atlanta. And that's where – it's kind of where you want to be.
Right.
So
like you said, yeah, that's the key. Like, as much as you're not cheering for Seattle this weekend, you're not exactly rooting for Philadelphia to win that game in the same way, because any outcome other than a tie really would screw Arizona there. Any outcome other than a tie helps Arizona, right? They either, like you said, they win and they pass Philadelphia and Minnesota, so all of a sudden they are at least the seventh seed. Or they gain a game on Seattle that was virtually unexpected, and again, they win their games, and now all of a sudden that Christmas Eve matchup is for the division. So, and again, that's all, like Jess said, that's all based upon them actually winning their games. But it comes down to this, like, you're not actively rooting for Seattle, but this is one time that you're going to go, you know, it wasn't the worst thing in the world that the Seahawks won this game.
Exactly. So let's kind of wrap up this final, this last segment and kind of bring it to the final segment, which we're going to talk about the Minnesota game. We're going to talk about the roster move. So coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red for our final segment will be previewing the Vikings and talking about Drew Butler. We're back for the final segment on Rise Up Sea Red, and the Cardinals made a roster move this week, kind of an odd one. Drew Butler is back. Ryan Quigley is out. Can you explain why? Because I don't have an answer.
Anytime you can lose 4 yards on your net punt average, you have to do it.
It's like, is it giving them more adversity to overcome? Is that what it is?
Exactly. Somebody in the comments section, somebody I wrote about it, you know, I said, I don't know. You know, the ending sentence was, Ryan Quigley is the lowest active NFL punter in terms of net punt average of 37.2 yards per punt.
And he's 7 yards higher than Butler.
Yeah, and the only punter that's lower is Drew Butler. Now, there are some kickers who have punted that are lower, including Chandler Catanzaro, but yeah. So it's one of those things, you know, you look at it. So anyways, the comment made was not just he has Arians in a compromising situation, but that maybe behind the scenes, Amos Jones and Bruce Arians blame Quigley for the Seattle fiasco, the blocked punt, and the hiccups on the field goals. And we'll never know that for sure. But maybe if we're searching for reasons, because performance doesn't dictate this move, right? And you said that. So if we're searching for reasons, if we're guessing, and that's what you and I are doing right now, is we're guessing, we're trying to explain this. Because they lost Marquis Christian because of this.
Right, exactly. So you lost a guy that was considered kind of diamond in the rough to keep Butler on the roster for an extra week when they eventually waived him with the injury waiver. So I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. But again, I usually don't question decisions that coaches make, because obviously they know more football about me, because otherwise I'd have their job and they'd be talking about me. There's obviously something there. Drew Butler is an Amos Jones guy, clearly. But this team, I mean, as many times as they've had to criticize him, they've never wavered in their trust in Drew Butler. And even when they waived him, there was the talk even then when they brought Quigley, and the Arians mentioned that they might bring him back at some point. So, you know, I don't know what it is. You know, it's inexplicable to me.
Let's just say, whatever ability you and I have as whatever analyst, scout, you know, person that watches every single game too many times, it does not include our evaluation abilities of the punting situation.
Punting and long snapping is that's kind of.
Well, I you got can the actually, long
you can do thing. Long snapping. I can. It's like, oh, he snapped the ball.
Yeah, but the the punting thing, clearly nobody outside of Arians and Amos Jones really understand what the heck is going on with that.
So since we don't know that, let's talk about the Vikings and this game coming up, which every single game the Cardinals play from here on out is a big game. Because, truthfully, they can't afford to lose any more games. They can't.
No,
I mean, they can lose one. And I think if they only lose one, they can do that. I just, like I said before, I don't think that's going to happen. But, well, let's go into something that they're going to. So, they've got a Minnesota team. And you look at, if you look at the way they played against San Francisco, you're going to see some problems. One, they couldn't run the ball against San Francisco. And San Francisco doesn't stop the run very well. Minnesota does. They weren't particularly well after their first couple of drives. They struggled scoring points against San Francisco, a team that gives up points in droves. Minnesota doesn't. So you're taking any of the sort of the positives offensively that you might have had, or you take even then you take the concerns that they have. And, yeah, now granted they had a great passing game against San Francisco, but guess what Minnesota can do? They can cover. San Francisco really had no edge presence in passing. You know, they got a couple sacks. Those were really kind of Carson Palmer sacks, but it's not like they generated much pass rush, and Minnesota can. The other side of the ball, of course, is what – they're using like their 10th offensive tackle this year because they can't keep anyone healthy. They lost Bridgewater, they lost Adrian Peterson, they lost all their tackles, and so now we have slugfests. Can the Cardinals win this way?
Well, I think they can, but it comes down to this, and you kind of hit on it. It comes down to the fact that the Arizona Cardinals or another have to define who they are. One of our staff writers, Delilah Cassidy, does our power rankings every week, and she put Arizona 22nd and took some heat for it, and maybe deservedly so. I don't know.
USA Today's rankings have them at 25th.
So yeah, there you go. And I think ESPN had them at 10th, right?
Yeah.
So nobody really knows what to think of this team. But I think you'll define who they are this weekend, because here's the reality, and I have a lot of friends that I talk with that are Minnesota Vikings fan. Nobody really believes in Minnesota. Nobody believes that they're good. Nobody believes that they can beat Arizona this weekend. Nobody believes that they're going to win very many more games the rest of this year. Because as you kind of pointed out, their offense is their offense is bad, and that's putting it really politely. And their defense all of a sudden is just struggling to make stops. And so if the Cardinals are a good team, and I'm not even saying a great team, I'm just saying a good team. If the Cardinals are a good team, this is a game they win. Whether it's close or not close, or, it's whatever. This is a game that a good team wins. If they lose this game, I think we can safely say this is just not a good team. And that's okay. That's okay. It'll be a refreshing understanding of what the team is and who the Cardinals are, and we can all mosey on with our day. But if they win this game, I think it puts them right back in the thick of everything, because they're at least going to be over Minnesota. So they're going to be up one spot in the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see. But
and you like some of the matchups. Now, Stephon Diggs is having a very, very good run right now. But they got Patrick Peterson, who can take care of him. In fact, Patrick Peterson completely shut him down last year. You know, it was almost laughable how well he covered Diggs last year, to the point where to get Diggs the ball to try and give, you know, appease him in his wide receiver ways of wanting the ball, they were throwing him screens last year. And then they got, you know, was as bad as their tackle situation. So we should be able to expect to see a big game from Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden. That should be the expectation. So Sam Bradford should be under big heat.
All game. They shouldn't be able to run the football.
Because they don't have a running game. They can't run the ball. They should be able to just attack Sam Bradford. They should be able to cover Stephon Diggs. If they can't, if they can cover Stephon Diggs, really, Kyle Rudolph's the guy to worry about. But if you're getting pressure on Sam Bradford, we know what's going to happen with Sam Bradford. He's going to get hurt, or he's going to turn the ball over. But then you have to get the ball out of the other side, and that's where can the Cardinals do anything offensively?
So they have to be able to stop Everson Griffin from pass rushing. That's one of the big things. They have to find a way to, you know, kind of consistently show the run. They don't have to – and that was what I was frustrated with in their game against the 49ers. It wasn't that they weren't running the football. It's that they weren't trying to run the football. You look at last weekend and the Redskins took on the Vikings and Minnesota went up, you know, 20-7 at one point, might have been 20-14, and lost 26-20. You know, you kind of talked about Kirk Cousins had kind of a field day, but Robert Kelly, I think his name is, Robert Kelly. I want to make sure I get his name right. Had 22 carries for 97 yards. Chris Thompson, their backup, had 4 carries for 25 yards. So their top two backs had 122 rushing yards on 26 carries. It's not about can they run the ball or anything like that. It's about committing to running the ball, being physical, attacking with the running game, because that's the only way you slow down an Everson Griffin and you allow the Cardinals and Carson Palmer and the other kid they have. Oh, I almost forgot. Danielle Hunter, who's having, you know, has been a really solid player in his second year out of LSU. So, you know, he's got 5 sacks on the season. You want this game to be won not from throwing the ball all around the field, but instead won by taking advantage of the fact that they do stop the run well. They do, as you alluded to. But they are vulnerable to the run as well. So you can't just bypass the run and go away from it. You have to be willing to continue to push and push and push. And even if it's not working, you know, you have to continue to be willing to run the ball. The Cardinals going into their last couple of drives were outgaining the 49ers on the ground and still running the ball less. And I don't mean with Colin Kaepernick's designed runs or even his scrambles. The running backs, until the end of the game, had more carries than the Cardinals' running backs. That can't happen. So that's what needs to, you know, kind of change if I'm looking at anything. The Cardinals, you know, need to continue to be willing to run the football and then understand that they can take the passing game as it comes along.
So do they get the win? Based on, obviously, early in the week. So we got a midweek look at what the Cardinals and the Vikings. I think they pull off this win. It's the game in Atlanta that has me more worried than this one at this point. So I'm going to, you know, the Cardinals are going to stick around another week. I see the Cardinals getting this win, and I think it'll be kind of an ugly one that they win 19-10, I'm going to say, is that sort of game. But I think they can get that win.
I'm with you. I think, you know, you and I haven't kind of done this in a while, but I think they win this week, and I think it's like a 21-13, maybe 17 kind of win, because they're a better team, and that's not a shot at the Vikings, but that's just a reality that I think, you know, 1 through 53, I think the Cardinals are superior. Now the question is, you know, do they play like it or not?
Yep, and we're now at the point where we can put a bow on this show and call it done. We're going to wrap this show up, put a bow on it, and that'll end our this edition of the Rise Up Seat Red podcast. We've talked about, you know, we recapped the San Francisco game. We talked about playoff standings. We talked about the Drew Butler signing, and then looked ahead to Minnesota. So, you know, keep an eye on us keep an ear on us. You can find us all over the place. We were featured on CardsWire.com, RevengeTheBirds.com, Sports360AZ.com, as well as you can find us on social media, you know, on Facebook at Rise Up Sea Red, on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. And we're also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. Pretty much, if you do podcasts and like listen to podcasts and you want to find something, you'll find us. We like to podcast and we like to talk. So you can find us. We're everywhere, guys. Thanks for listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening to Rise Up Sea Red. And go Cardinals.